Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello everyone, we are live for the Red Men podcast. If you're watching this live, then make sure you interact with us using the comments alongside. I am Paul Machin, and I'm joined by the wonderful pairing of James Sutton and Sam Walker.
We love this, yeah.
We love this.
Great team.
Been a little bit of a jacket loving you've had.
Oh yeah.
They both own the same jacket.
It's lovely.
It's fantastic.
There's nothing more to it than that, to be honest, like you mean, but it felt like something significant a couple of minutes ago. It was a real bonding moment. Right, yeah, we've got loads of stuff to talk about today. We're obviously coming toward the back end of the international break, which is amazing. How many players Liverpool will have when they finally take the field the weekend, I'm not quite sure. Best thing you can do in this situation is to tweet Dan Kennett about depth charts. Just make sure you blame Dan for having the ignominy of pointing out that Liverpool have lots of footballers, but then some of them get injured as though it's somehow his fault. Keep that going all season if we can. Sorry, Dan. But yeah, we got some kick-off questions. We're going to be talking about how Liverpool get their title challenge back on track, if they even need to, I guess, and what the upcoming couple of weeks means. We're going to talk a little bit about Gerrard at Villa as well. But yeah, we've got a couple of kick-off questions. Lifelong Indian Red says, if you could swap three players from City/Chelsea, who would they be? Now, I'm imagining this, I don't know how anyone's interpreted this, because, you know, James clearly turned up late because you were studying the agenda that you asked for.
I mean, I wasn't...
You got an agenda?
I wasn't technically late. I was on air on time.
Yeah.
No, I haven't put a huge amount of thought... So, is he talking about swapping our players?
Yeah, I would imagine swap one for one. Now, what I always say in this is that because I've had many years working alongside Chris Page, I can find the way to game this. Find the way to game every single one of these questions. I think within a degree of fairness, so I would say swapping first 11 players, so you're not swapping out Taki Minamino
for Lukaku.
That was how I was going to deal with it. I was just going to get rid of Minamino, Origi, and
absolutely Adrian. There you go, boxed off. Yeah. Oh. But no, I mean, I guess if we look at it from this perspective, who are the City or Chelsea players that you cast envious glances over?
De Bruyne.
Yeah.
He'd do. Yeah. Foden, I mean, he's all right.
Yeah.
Grealish, I think I'm still a big Jack Grealish fan. I'd take any of those three, but I don't know who I'd swap them for, and I don't know where they'd fit in. But I mean, you'd make room, wouldn't you?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this feels very like Manchester United board of directors approach to transfers.
We'll make room. We'll worry about that later.
Good players. They're good players to play together. So, have any thoughts?
The problem is, I look at our team and I think...
Well, you've just spent the weekend pulling apart the merits and demerits of Reece James versus Trent Alexander.
Oh, I love it.
Based
yeah.
on the formation.
Yeah.
The
I always hate end of season 11s, like, because they put Ronaldo left back to get him in, you know, things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so I'm going off our best 11 that we always talk about that we never see, with Thiago, Hendo and Fabinho. And I think there's two places up for grabs. Thiago's spot, because he's not fit enough at the minute to hold that down, and the striker.
Yeah.
Look at Chelsea. Do you want Lukaku? Probably not really for us. So I'm really not swapping that. City, I don't have a striker. Unless we want to play Foden in the false nine, maybe, potentially. I'd probably say I'd take Foden and stick him in our midfield.
Yeah.
Beyond that, it's difficult.
It's hard because we've got a bloody good team.
Yeah.
It's more problematic. Who do you leave? Who do you get rid of out of our team than it is who do you take from theirs?
My outside shout, I know, and this will probably cause people to like snort into their tea, is to say someone like Timo Werner, because as much as you become a little bit of like a mean because you can't finish his dinner. No, but like people go on about it. I know, like
no, he can't finish his dinner.
It's a big doesn't like him and all this kind of stuff, but. We clearly put a lot of time and effort into scouting him, and he was quite clearly our number one choice, and our number two choice is quite clearly Diogo Jota, and he's awesome. So it stands to reason that Werner would be at least as good under Klopp in Liverpool's way of playing.
At least as good as Jota.
Yeah, I mean, so like for like, but I'd still rather have Diogo Jota, hands down.
Mm-hmm. What about, really left my mind then, oh shit, it's just, what about De Bruyne in the false nine? Because he's played up there for City, hasn't he?
He can play fucking anywhere.
Mm. Or Salah up front, him like on that right, something like that.
Kante, can you fit Kante in?
Yeah. Mm.
To shout?
Are you dropping Fab though? It's tough that, isn't it?
That's tough. The honest answer is here, to the point, they're all great squads, but I like ours. And this is the thing about not having lots of transfer chain. But not having lots of transfer chain does mean this, is that I've grown quite attached to a great number of our side, and even like the fringe lads. Like, we saw the Divock Origi art house movie that he put up. Did you watch the link I put in the group? James. So, I meant to send this to Neil Jones through the week as well. Divock, I don't know whether he's commissioned it himself, but he's certainly the subject matter of a 6-minute art house film, like a deconstruction self-portrait of Divock Origi, and it's
why was more of it wasn't made in the WhatsApp chat, was it?
No, to be fair, I don't think there was a lot of uptake on it. You talked about it, I think Jay talked about
it's
it.
It's definitely a message in there, like.
It's great, and it completely and utterly changed my perspective on Divock, to the point where I love him again, and then he obviously went and scored against West Ham as well off the back of it. And so that's my point. I'd struggle to even swap. We're going into the backup players. I like Divock that much.
You can't get rid of Divock. Divock's a big moment player, isn't he?
for
all the frustration surrounding him, and there is a lot, and for all the games where he turns up and you go, fucking hell, Divock, he just does something utterly genius mental, and you go, well, there, that's our Divock.
That's it. Not your spot on. It's just, we've got the best 11 in the league. Just problem is getting them all out there. Just
keep them all fit.
Keep them fit. Stay fit, please.
Yeah.
Fuck off international breaks.
Yeah. Rohit Sharma here saying I'd have Bernardo Silva. I'd probably use one. Yeah. You look at that. What I think we want Harvey Elliott to do in our midfield, I think that's what Bernardo Silva does at a world-class level already for Man City. And of course, he can play across the front three if you need him to. And it's like he's forgotten. Like he turned the way he played against us at Anfield. Like, you know, everyone was going on about Mo
Salah. And United as well.
So, yeah. But he was just free roaming with the ball around the pitch, which was
terrifying.
I mean, he might be, there's a chance he's a bit of a bell end.
Oh, definitely.
But
not a chance. Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, again, this is a problem. Again, I don't really pay attention to other teams' players.
It doesn't
so much
feel like we have any bell ends in our team, really. Is there anyone? Like, there's no one that I think you're probably a bit of a prick. You.
Yeah, I don't know.
There isn't anyone.
No, because I don't think it really stands for.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, maybe there's a couple of like lovable rogues. You know what I mean?
The Scouse lads have probably got a bit about them. You know what I mean? Yeah. But that's, we love it. But other people might think, oh, he's a bit of a tool.
No, I think I think that's a good point. That there's not many great. There's not actually a lot of people in the comments with too many shouts. To be perfectly honest, here we had that. We had N'Golo Kante as a shout there. Obviously, you had mentioned Bernardo Silva.
Jorginho, has he got a shout?
Jorginho,
decent player, isn't he?
Yeah. But
you'd all like, we all like Kevin De Bruyne. So we're talking about injury prone midfielders.
There's another one
he'd fit right in, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Swapping for Naby.
We could have Laporte as a backup. That'd do.
Who's the one that's meant to be good?
Diaz. You can't run him though. God, he's great, but he makes Matip look quick.
It's just, there's no need for me to be so just underhandedly antagonistic there. Like, you have no idea whether he's good enough or not. again,
don't watch other teams. Good suggestions there. It is a real struggle, that one. LFC Crossbow, LFC _backup says, do you guys still believe we can win something with all of these injuries? because well, this will kind of lead on to our conversation after the break, post break and what have you. But we're very up and down at the moment, aren't we, James? And it's mad because I did feel extra down. I felt extra down last weekend because I'd had to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning to watch it because I was in Vancouver and the 8-hour time difference was murder. But that definitely exacerbated my feelings. And I can understand why people's feelings are hyped up in those kind of circumstances as well. But it's hard to... It does overwrite it a little bit, but we can't let it detach ourselves from the fact that we've just pissed our Champions League group as well, the group of death. So you want both. We want all things at all times. But I don't know. I do think we can win something with all those injuries, because I've watched us play in the Champions League this season and at times thought, like Atletico, who should be on our level, I think we're levels miles above them as an example, and they're the Spanish champion.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's about injuries and keeping people fit, but it's also about consistency, and it's about... Ultimately, we're conceding goals. That's, you know, and if you want to challenge for titles, if you want to win trophies, fundamentally, you can't be conceding the goals that we've been conceding against teams like, you know, I'm looking at Brentford and teams like that. You just simply can't do that. And whilst we have got injuries, and we know the players that, you know, are injury prone, and you perhaps can't rely on, you know, for 100% of your games in a season. Defensively, we've got a lot of cover and a lot of fit lads there. So, you know, whilst I know we do defend as a team, fundamentally, you've got to shore that up and you've got to stop conceding goals. And then from that as a foundation, then you can go and take it forward and try and win some titles.
I think this is the issue with our Liverpool. Like, this can't be proved until we see a bit more of a sample size on this. But I think we expected that more teams would follow the model of what was costing us points last season and would come and just park the bus against us and go, yeah, go ahead. And we've gone, right, okay, we've worked all summer on how do we go more attacking to start blowing those teams away. And then we've met up with a bunch of teams that just keep throwing punches at us and keep playing a lot, you know, play a bit more like Leeds did at Anfield last season than say Burnley did at Anfield or Brighton did or whatever. Like, you know, where teams we really struggled to break them down. West Brom was set the template, didn't they, last year? How are you feeling, Sam? I know you are generally, I feel like, an optimistic person, but also that doesn't always never represent in your online
do you know what? I'm always optimistic when it comes to things like injuries. I think they do get blown sometimes way out of proportion. Like even after last night, I'm sure we'll talk about that in a bit. Anyway, but for me,
well, we're talking about just for this, Robbo limped off, Mane limped off.
So my perspective is, let's just see what Klopp says on Friday first. Like, Robbo's a warrior; he's not injured unless he's injured. Same with Mane; they're both solid; they don't get injured. So anyway, moving forward, that's what you asked originally. I think this year it's really interesting. The two cups I look at now and think, what are we more out of four? Are we more likely to win? Due to just the sort of landscape of the league after the West Ham results, having a couple of weeks to digest it, I think we can win the League Cup. City are out. Chelsea have got a hard task coming back from Qatar going to Brentford, and then I still think they're not as good as City anyway. I digress. And then I look at the Champions League. The issue we've got with the League Cup, the issue we've got with the domestic is at the moment is that right now we're not buying anyone. We unless the club changes its mind or unless it does something in January, as Neil said the other day, we should do. But we're going to struggle in January in a semi-final, potentially over two legs in the League Cup. An FA Cup, minimum two, maybe three rounds to get through without some of our top players, and a league campaign to keep up with after we've just played Leicester and Chelsea at Christmas. We're up against it domestically at the minute. I think we can definitely win the Champions League, but anyone can. So we've just got to take games two at a time, a bit like we did when we were chasing top four. Go win the next two, see where we are in the league, do it again.
I think Liverpool can win, but I don't think this is the thing with all these injuries implies that all these players are now written off for the season, which they're not.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. At the moment, it's going to be interesting to see what's available at the weekend, and because this time last year. Like, I know we'd had like the Villa defeat and what have you, had a couple of like mad moments, but by the time we beat Spurs in December and went top of the league, I was convinced we were just going to piss it. We'd survived the Virgil van Dijk injury, we were ticking along okay, and out of the blue, it just took our legs away when we hit West Brom and then into January. So it's a bit too early to know, speak with absolute certainty. My overriding gut feeling is that we're dead good, and until you start losing
until, you know, unless we replicate last season and we have like three season-ending injuries to the midfield, to the key important lads, I imagine we're going to be in and around the conversation. But of course, you can't know. But of course, that there lies the path to madness, because you can sit and worry about what might happen if the worst happens. And you don't need to wonder, because you saw it. We'll just finish.
We've been there.
Yeah, exactly.
So no, it is definitely. It is. I understand the anxiety around it, but
yeah, as long as we're not, it doesn't get worse. And you just have a constant, you know, you're getting lads back.
That's it. A lot of our lads are interchangeable. Let's not forget. And like you say, as long as it's not career-ending, season-ending injuries, we have got enough. But you're right. I'd love to see one or two in January.
Yeah,
I'd love to see.
It's the AFCON, isn't it?
That's the big thing, isn't it?
Injuries as well, but. I'm considering everyone's fit at the moment in January.
The problem with Liverpool is the problem from the summer remains. There's no more spaces in the Premier League squad. So if you want to sell, if you want to buy someone, you've got to sell someone. And I don't think they've oxed on his chances any harm of resurrecting a potential move somewhere. But I also don't think he wants to. Again, having watched the deep cut art house interpretation of his psyche, I know that he believes this is all part of his plan. Like, he's on the fringes, but he's got to put his work in, and he believes that he's where he wants to be and where he needs to be and all that kind of stuff. And I don't think Liverpool, on the balance of things, would gamble chucking an Origi out and bringing someone in cold.
I think we've got one spot, by the way.
Yeah,
Shaqiri went and there was all the talk of that, remember? Shaqiri's got to go before we bring something we didn't.
Yeah,
so unless Karius has got a shirt, which I'm pretty sure he hasn't, I think we've got one spot we could, if we wanted to, fill with an international player. So there is that chance, but yeah.
Okay, well, I actually know you might be spot on that one, but the point remains on it is that if you're bringing someone in, look, Taki Minamino is a great example of this. That, you know, we brought him in the January to add to us, and he added a handful of minutes is what he was bringing to the side. So
yeah, it is a tough one, right? Look, I can't realise how short this is, so I can't throw to an advert break just yet. So let me fill time for a few more moments. I went over
to Vancouver, as mentioned. I was privileged to be invited, as Chris was as well, to be part of the COP Canada event over in Vancouver. It was a 3-day mega event for Liverpool fans in North America, where basically we just went on the aisle and sang loads of Liverpool songs for 3 days with Bruce Grobbelaar, Roy Evans, and Phil Thompson.
I'll fucking do that one.
It was tremendous. Anyway, there is a 45-minute feature on that event that's going to be going on Red Men Plus this afternoon, which is plays a load of songs through from the Ragamuffins. They played an absolutely unreal set on the Saturday night. So yeah, there's loads of music, loads of tunes, loads of dancing, loads of singing, and loads of great stuff, including, we're going to show you a little sneak peek of it, Roy Evans belted out a couple of numbers on the weekend, but he did an incredible rendition of Ally. So yeah, have a little look at this. We'll be back in a second.
Hey everyone, Mate here. Just a little insert from me to say that if you enjoy this podcast and the other podcast that we put out for free and you want more, then my word, you can have more on the redmentv.com. Go over there, sign up and get extra bonus shows from us each and every week, as well as a whole suite of video content, documentaries, features and interviews. But yes, you can also play those podcasts in your native podcasting app as well, to have a seamless Red Men TV experience in your ears. TheRedMenTV.com. Sign up there today.
Yes, that is just scratching the surface of the absolute magnificence of that. So yeah, it was great to catch up with the Cop Canada guys, all the fans over in Vancouver, and from the official Liverpool supporters group in Vancouver as well, who are incredibly generous with their hospitality. They've got their own, basically got their own pub, and the owner of the group of pubs has like decorated in Liverpool stuff. So he's got like slogans from "You'll Never Walk Alone" like stenciled onto the walls. There's a big like sign up and all that kind of stuff. It's just boss. It was an absolutely amazing weekend. Yeah, just getting to hang out with the legends and sing Liverpool songs. What more?
He's wild, isn't he, Roy?
Christmas early, that, isn't it?
Yeah, Roy was amazing. Absolutely amazing. So yeah, there's that, literally seeing Roy Evans as well, singing "You'll Never Walk Alone," and like he breaks down crying at the end and all kinds. Oh my God, it's just brilliant. So anyway, that video will be up on Redmen Plus on the RedmenTV.com later this afternoon on the Tuesday. So do check that out. And it is, of course, free view month as well. So if you haven't tried it yet, if you get over there and use the code REDMENPLUS, which is one word, all caps, REDMENPLUS, then you can try everything we do over on our Liverpool streaming service completely for free. That's in video form and in podcast form as well, so you can get all of these extra shows, like the podcast where we do Around the League, we do the debate show, Chris does his tactics show as well. There's a whole host of amazing stuff each and every week that you can get in your podcasting app via our subscription service, so get involved. Right, yes, big few weeks coming up for the Reds. I've had longer than that, but I was a temptation to tie the conversation in, James, to Crimbo. Well done, Si. Tie it into the Crimbo period, but I kind of wanted to pull it back to the next sort of 3 weeks or so, taking it into December. Arsenal at the weekend, Southampton, Everton with two Champions League, the two remaining Champions League games kind of in and amongst that as well. I think being qualified for the Champions League is... this is where we're going to see the benefits, because clearly we've put a lot of energy into that, and maybe the league has suffered a touch as a result. But you know, we've boxed that with two games to go now. You'd hope that that stands us in good stead to get some, pick up some more points in the league.
It does, but Jurgen Klopp's got this habit of taking games a bit seriously that you don't need to take quite so seriously. He's got this habit of, we've all seen it, haven't we, when you know the team sheet gets released and you think, fucking hell, why is he playing them? So don't be, you know, we're all saying, oh, you know, we're through, and you know, it's all fine, and we can take our foot off the gas, and we can, you know, we can rest players. Don't be surprised if he goes harder than is needed in these Champions League games, because it's a pride thing as well. And also we get a shit ton of money for winning these group games as well, let's not forget. So there's that side of it. Look, ultimately the league games are all winnable, but I go back to what I said before, it's about defence, it's about not conceding any fucking goals, because if we start, you know, if we leak a couple, all of a sudden there's a different conversation to be had there, especially against, you know, there's this Southampton team, they're not playing amazingly, but they've still got goal scorers there, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think there's a balance to be struck, and I do feel like we've tried to blitz the league here, and I said we're much more Man City like than I think we've been, and I think it actually goes all the way back to 17-18. I think we were planning to be like this then, but Coutinho pulling the rug from underneath us at the start of the season and having to move kind of upset the plans for that a little bit, and we had to go a bit more pragmatic and use what we had. But I think we've actually hit upon a lot of the same issues that Man City have got, where we will beat you 5-0, or you'll give us a massive bloody nose. It's very similar to what they've been over the last sort of 3 or 4 years, which is in some regards, because we're terrified of Man City.
Yeah.
But it's also the reason why I Man City can lose to almost anyone, and yet you know that they can beat anyone 5-0 as well.
It's funny, because with the league, like, I think the two best teams in the league are Liverpool and City still, but there's also that chance that Chelsea could just grind their way to like a 6-point lead, because just the way they play. So I completely agree with you. We've got a lot of City in us from 1920 at the moment, where they were leaky but devastating. But I do think we've been a bit unlucky last few games. When you look at the circumstances of the games, I mean, was it Mwepo? Is that how you say his name? The goal he scored? Jesus Christ, he wouldn't do that in five seasons. Just one first goal for the club. Just happens, and then whatever. West Ham, go into all the details of that game. I just think we've got to be a bit smarter. That's all. I think defensively, I actually think the back four haven't been too bad. I think they've done well. It's what's in front of them. We just haven't been smart enough. We haven't controlled the tempo, slowed it down, little fouls. We just need to be a bit smarter in there and we'll be fine.
And a bit nastier.
That's it, yeah. Take a yellow card, you know, rather than three of you chasing after a kid who's rapid. Like when Bernardo did what he did, you spoke about it earlier. That should never have happened. One of them should have just kicked him up in the air and took a yellow card.
Yeah.
Straight away. Like, we don't... I think it's just... learning that, but I think they will do that. I think that, like, Robbo's got it in, and Firmino's definitely got it in. Milner, yeah, 100%. But next few games, I think we'll be fine. I mean, Arsenal, they're going to play into our hands.
Well, Arsenal's an interesting test to kind of kick things off. We got a comment in, actually, let me just find it, from an Arsenal fan, no less, AFC Max. $5 for 2%. Thank you so much, Max. Sorry, boys, I like LFC, but Arsenal are going to win against you boys 2-0. You have 8 players out. However, I still honestly believe both Arsenal and LFC will be top 4. I mean, thanks for, like, the real condescension there. I believe that Liverpool will be top 4 too.
thanks, Max.
Yeah,
the Arsenal, I mean, the idea of Arsenal is tough because people are carrying this notion that they're a bit crap, and I think it's false. I think they started the season poorly, but they also started the season without Aubameyang, without Lacazette. Yeah. They hadn't blooded the goalie in, they hadn't blooded Ben White in, yeah, I think Tierney had an injury problem, they had no Partey in midfield. So there was, to say, some issues they hadn't, and they, oh yeah, they haven't even brought Odegaard back in at that point, yeah, as well. They've got a good team, they've actually got a decent manager. My hope with them though is that they are still very early stages of this journey, and we've had this before. I always think back to Brendan Rodgers' first season, and we played Arsenal and we tried to play passing football, and they just went like like, you know, like we were trying to play them at their own game, and we were doing a rough impression of a YouTube, yeah, tutorial, and they were like, you know, blooded into this world. That's my sort of hope with Arsenal more than anything else in this.
I think when you look at Arsenal though, if like let's just compare him to West Ham, like Alisson's got this giant of a defender in front of him waving his arms around. Have Arsenal even got a 6 foot player in their team? The Ben White's not 6 foot. I don't know the lads of Gabriel. I think he's a big lad, but physically, mentally, I will say that about Arsenal, because we do know they, you know, mentally they've not been the greatest over the last few years. They've crumbled a little bit. Experience wise, it's Anfield. I just think for us to not win this game, we're going to have to be really bad at what we do best. Yeah. Like, Mo Salah will be licking his lips against that defence, because Arsenal do. I know they've had a good run of games recently and they've done all right, but they concede chances and goals.
Yeah.
Teams like Arsenal right now, we should be looking at and going, 3 goals at home. I know it's a bit condescending to happen, but that's where they're at. They're good. They've got loads of young talent, but Saka and Smith Rowe are not Mane and Salah.
No, they're not.
That's what I'm saying. So it's the levels difference. Partey is not Fabinho. Yep. Do you know what I mean?
Paul's right. You say, you know, they're earlier on in their journey. They're not the finished article, and that goes for the manager as well. He's still learning on the job. You know, so the whole process. I think, you know, if they carry on down the path that they're on with a couple more signings, I think in 12, 18 months, I think it'll be a very different Arsenal. But right now, I'd much rather face them than like a West Ham.
West Ham. Yeah.
I mean, that was, you know, that was a Davy Moyes masterclass, let's not be honest. Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, tactically very, very astute, very intelligent, and executed really, really well. I don't think Arsenal have got that. I still think they've got a soft underbelly. And like you say, I think, you know, you're coming up against players like Sadio Mane, assuming that he's fit. And, you know, Mo Salah, strong lads. They're just going to body that defence.
Well, there was a point made in our Club Legend Discord group today where people talk about the injuries and, like, the fears and all that kind of stuff around it. And I said, look, you can get sort of stressed out about it and worry about it. Ultimately, there's nothing we can do about it at this point. I mean, you can start to rally and say it's all the ownership's fault and all that, when, you know, I think Michael Edwards made a good point of pointing this out. Like, it's him. He's, you know, Liverpool have got the squad they've got because of what how he's chosen to help construct it, along with the manager and stuff. I think back to, and it's funny, it's Arsenal as well. With Liverpool in 2004, 2005, now we struggled in the league that season. It was Rafa's first season in charge. He was trying to get a tune out of it, trying to change the style of play, all that kind of stuff. And he was ravaged by injuries that side. But when a player drops out, what it presents is an opportunity for another player to make themselves a hero. And that's the beauty of Liverpool's squad depth as well, is that we're not throwing... In 2004, we threw Neil Mellor into that side, and he scores the winning goal against Arsenal. It's one of the greatest let-offs I've ever had watching a football match. And I watched it on telly as well, and I ran round the... I was managing a pub in Sheffield, and I literally kissed the big screen, ran round, you know, a lunatic, because Neil Mellor gave me that sort of moment. And we had loads of them in that season. Pongol came up with some big moments for us. Liverpool have got the players that are on Liverpool's squad list this season who are likely to fall into that category are Divock Origi, who has done it before at the highest level. You know, again, Taki Minamino, you could make the case of he's not been given a chance because maybe he's not good enough, but maybe it's just that everyone else is so good that he just hasn't been given the chance to do it.
Yeah, probably
it's
that. Yeah.
And this is the thing, we've got this game coming up, is that even if we have got a couple of players missing, It should give Arsenal a better chance, but also it, under that siege mentality, it might actually benefit Liverpool a bit, because we have been a little bit up and down, and maybe it causes them to just, I don't know, buck their ideas up a bit, because I just think there's a bit of sloppiness at times that's cost us. AC Milan's a great example of that. We were streets ahead.
Giving the ball away, yeah. Man. That's what really winds me up, yeah. Man.
We've been middle of the park.
Middle of the park. There's no, you're not under any particular pressure. Just a loose ball. Just, you know, it's come down to concentration and just focus and just getting your head up and having a fucking look before you make a pass. It's really, really basic stuff. But fundamentally, if you don't get that right, then, you know, you're all over the shop, aren't you?
Yeah, and Arsenal represents a big opportunity because it's a big game as well. Mm. Big game, big opportunity. Going to be a big atmosphere at Anfield as well. I mean, again, the Brighton game was just, that was one of the, I remember thinking about it, it felt like the most normal football game I've been to in, yeah. No, but like in a few years. It was the first time there was no, I don't know if there were queuing issues outside, but it felt really easy to get into the ground. Everyone was very relaxed, it was casual, but there was no, it was, and there ended up being no atmosphere as a result of it, because there are games, and there always were these games where you kind of take it for granted, and it sounds stupid because, you know, when you don't go, it's hard to imagine a world where you wouldn't go and scream your heart out for 90 minutes and that kind of stuff. But there's always been those games where you actually need the players on the pitch to jig the crowd up, and then you get it back. Whereas Arsenal is the perfect synergy. The players are going to be up for it, the fans are going to be up for it. It's a good footballing team, it'll be a good footballing game. So regardless of who we've got available and what we do, this should be they're actually a pretty decent side for us to play. It's not Chelsea. Mm-hmm. Mm. It's not City. It's not West Ham again. You know, it's a team that, as we say, are early on the journey, will have ambitions to cause us problems, because they'll think if Brighton can do it, hell, we can do it. But hopefully it's got that perfect storm. There's a good super chat here, actually, from Connor S. To kind of follow on a bit of the point about the defensive issues, he says, "Do we think it's possible defence is suffering psychology issues due to last year's injuries, i.e., Lucas after his ACL? Maybe.
I don't think Virgil van Dijk's back to his best yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's worth pointing out.
I have a moment, and you feel the same whenever he goes into a Virgil van Dijk one on one situation. I do just." Mm. Clench a little bit more. Now, I haven't really seen him have any, he's dealt with all of those, but I do feel like every time he takes the field and he has one of them, it's another hurdle for him on the way back to where he needs to be.
It's funny, because do you know the second goal West Ham score, when we talk about, yeah, he should have been taken down, the ball gets played through, and if you watch Van Dijk, it's the same happens in the Griezmann scores his second goal as well, actually, at the Wonder. Van Dijk doesn't throw his body along the floor to just get in the way, like, and he's a big guy, he could have, and you watch that goal and you think he's almost sort of half standing, and I'm thinking, why are you just launching yourself on the floor? So I do, that might just be him,
he's never been that defender though.
That's what I mean, yeah, he might not, but that kind of was good to him. But I'll be honest with you, I haven't seen anybody yet have him off. I haven't seen anybody do him in the offside trap. It's always Robbo being a bit too deep, Trent or Matip at times, or Gomez, whoever's playing next to him. I haven't seen anything yet. Antonio didn't want to go near him. Every time Antonio had the ball, he's one of the most powerful forwards in Europe at the moment in terms of how quick he is, strong he is, and how many goals he's got. And every time he went near Van Dijk, he got a corner at best. I don't know. I just feel like we're being sucker punched, and we've been unlucky. I mean, the Brighton first goal, the two of the West Ham goals off corners, I don't really know what the defence can do there.
Mm-hmm.
Alisson can be stronger, the ref can help us, that's it. I mean, are the defence really that bad?
A point that's worth pointing out, we do this every year, and it's this point of the season every year, and we seem to have a mad blind spot for it. Every football fan does this, and I know this because we used to do Social Club on Ball Street, where I'd sit every Monday with like Ped from Toffee TV, and I'd sit with Robbie from Arsenal Fan TV, and I'd sit with like Housen from, you know, Stretford Paddock and all that kind of stuff. All these lads following all these different clubs, particularly when it's the pressure cooker of Champions League and league football, and when you want to win and you're under the microscope of there being six or seven teams for four places as well, it always feels like there's a crisis when you're not perfect.
Yeah.
And we are in that stage. And now, the season we won the Champions League, we were exactly at this as well. We had a couple of sticky results in and around this time of the season, where again you're balancing both, and it feels like the sky's falling down on you at all times, and it feels indicative of a larger generalised problem. But every club kind of has this. Yeah. You know, people aren't focusing enough on the fact that, like, City haven't been great either at times. You know, Chelsea are due a rough patch at some point. They might not.
Got a couple of tough games, though.
They haven't been outstanding, Chelsea. No. You mentioned it earlier. They're kind of grinding out sort of one, maybe 2-0 results. There's nothing kind of there's nothing really, like, I'm watching them and going, fucking hell, there's a title contender. The fact that we're talking more about Man City speaks volumes, I think.
Yeah, and they, look, they're both brilliant teams, and the thing is, they've both got the quality and the depth and now the silverware winning experience, and we know this from first hand experience, you can just go. It feels to me this season, it's very unrecognisable because we're so used to, if you want to win the title, you've got to put down a 95-point season to do it, because that's how we've needed to achieve it. You know, we finished second with 97 points or whatever. This might be a return to the norm where you can win the league with, you can't lose five games, but you can maybe lose three or four and still win the title. This might be more of an 86-point sort of campaign. But we can't know that now. At the moment, it feels on top. It feels like it's all on Liverpool because you look at fourth and it feels like we're more in a battle for, you know, the fourth place all of a sudden because of a couple of dodgy results. Whereas if you can put a 10-game winning run down, you'll blow a lot of those teams away is my feeling on it. But again, it's you can't see that until it actually happens, of course. I want to have a little look then at Liverpool's, obviously we've touched upon Liverpool's fixtures already, but we know we've got Arsenal on Saturday, that's the 5:30. We've got Porto at Anfield on Wednesday, Southampton at Anfield on the Saturday, and the Merseyside derby takes us into December at Goodison Park on the 1st, at 8:15 as well, which would be a big one.
Spicy.
Yeah, I know, right? And the fact that, you know, there's so much on the line there, least of all next year's Christmas jump.
I love that that's even a thing nowadays. A thing, yeah. Whenever we play Everton at Christmas, you're just thinking that.
I've got to sing the Merry Christmas Everton song. That's like, it's a Christmas tradition.
I've
at
got
this point.
Divock Origi plays just some part in that game.
Yeah. But that's interesting. Obviously, we then travel to Wolves, and then heading beyond that, we're heading into the festive period. We'll talk about the Villa game in a little bit. We're going to talk about the Gerrard stuff to follow. But that's Liverpool stuff. Looking at the Chelsea fixtures, they have got a really interesting run of games now. So they're away at Leicester at the weekend. They then have Juventus at home in the Champions League. Now they're pretty much done in the Champions League, but still, you know, Juventus
are top of the group though, so they've got to beat them
to overgo. Absolutely. They then host Manchester United on the Sunday, which is obviously, that's a give three, a 3-point gimme for Chelsea. And they've got Watford away, West Ham away, as we heading into December. So United thing notwithstanding, there's a bunch of games you could conceivably, you could lose all of them games. They won't, because that's not how it works, but you could lose any one of those games of football. I mean, look, Ranieri has had a bit of chance to settle Watford down by that point as well. Makes that certainly a little bit more interesting. Taking a look down to the Man City fixtures, they have got the Ev at the weekend, which again at home, which you'd expect them to do the business in, but they've got PSG in the Champions League, because again their group is very much not done. That's a massive game. They've then, having played PSG on the Wednesday, they then host West Ham on the Sunday. That's huge. They've then got Villa on the 1st of December.
Stevie G
followed by away to Watford. So on paper it looks a bit more favourable, but I'm sure we would have looked at West Ham and thought, oh well, West Ham, we'll do all right there. But as we've proven, West Ham can definitely throw some heavy digs around themselves.
West Ham are a confident team, and they're dangerous when they're confident. They always have been. When a few years ago, when they had that little push in the top four in the last season at the Boiling, is what they decided to call it for 1 year. It was always Upton Park.
Always Upton Park.
Yeah. That was mad, wasn't it?
The Bowling. The bowling ground.
Where?
The bowling ground. No, it's Upton Park, lads. Come on.
But yeah, that season when they had Paella and they were really, really strong. I might have had Andy Carroll where he actually put a season out or, you know, played 20 games. Yeah.
Played the last 10 games and then made you think, oh, he's good for England in the summer.
But that's it. When they're playing that with that confidence, they just seem to get on a bit of a roll, and that's where they are right now. So they're a threat. And they, you know, as what they've done to us, they can give bloody noses to the others. They might not beat them, they might draw with them or have a few really tough games. It takes a bit out of them.
They look like they're really enjoying their football. For me, they're playing with smiles on their faces, which, you know, is quite a rare thing coming into Christmas.
The
boys.
So no, I mean the point is, what Liverpool need to do, I you know, there's a it's either the gap that started to form between us and Chelsea, which is a little bit of a concern, because it is a growing gap, because we had that opportunity to turn it round and we kind of blown that in the last couple of weeks. We're about to, I think, those next 3 to 4 games is going to determine whether we are. That was just a little bit of a misstep whilst we were sorting other bits and pieces out, and because the Christmas run-in is going to be telling. I think from there on in, from December to the end of January, the sort of mid-February, is going to be the real meat of the season. That's going to decide the title, I think, largely. And we need to know whether we're in a title challenge or not, because I always say you're not actually in a title challenge until 10 games from the end, really, but you can be miles out of it by that point. And we've seen other teams drop off. How many times Chelsea have been in a 3-way title race and by the second week of December they're gone, completely gone. Spurs, same, out of the picture. We need to make sure as we head into December we are within 3 points or no worse than we are currently of the top, and we need to see how that sort of lies.
We need to hit our stride, because I've said this on previous shows, you know, I still maintain that we're nowhere near our best yet this season. You know, the Atletico, they were shit. Man United, they were shit. You know, aside from that, we haven't had any really big scorelines. We haven't really battered that many teams. We haven't really done the absolute business that we know these players.
Well, we've battered lots of teams. It's just we haven't ground wins out. That's the difference. This is my point. That's why we're very Man City, is that, you know, you see it all the time when the archetype on Man City defeat is to a plucky side that works really hard and gets in your face. You know, when you think about that defeat to Norwich away a couple of seasons ago, the last time they were up, that's the teams that beat Man City, and that's the teams that are causing us loads of problems this season. And we had that run of not score, you know, winning by 3 goals in every away game for the first 500 away games of the season or whatever. We have the capability of doing it, but what we've lost, two things, is we don't seem to be able to just win 1-0 and go, oh, we've got our goal then, all the best.
Yeah,
all the best, you come swinging for us and we'll grind this one out. And we haven't got that magic turnaround goal yet, the one where it's heading into the final 5 minutes and you just find a way to win. And my fear is that that's why I don't think we'll win the title unless we discover that again. But then again, I have one experience of us winning the league. Yeah. And we had that season, but then we also won the league by the biggest margin anyone's ever won the league. So I don't think that's ever going to happen again.
But if you look at, we've lost one game in 26 matches, and that game took two road PVAR decisions. One was 50-50, they got it. I'm accepting that, that's fine, Ogbonna, whatever, but the red card, Jesus Christ, that was a red card, and it will be a red card every other game this season. So it took that, it took Mane to miss two absolute sitters, Alisson to have a really poor game by his standards and let 3 goals, and he probably would look back at and think, I should have done better on all of them. So it took all of those things, and we still lost by 1 goal going into the final seconds of the game. It took all those things for us to lose a game of football. How often is that going to happen in a season when the referee, your form, your fortune, your striker who scored loads of goals recently misses two glorious chances? How often is that going to happen for us? And I think that's the positive you've got to look at. It took all of those extreme circumstances for us to lose. We've already played City and Chelsea and United once, so we're only going to play them one more time. United are crap anyway. So, you know, I'm confident of that. Where I do worry a little bit is the draws. But I think that's it now.
Well, that's
I'm confident we're now going to go, no.
The draws are what stand between a title winning side and a top four side. And it's because that's the process. You come in and you say you're outside the top four, it's defeats that cost you. What happens is you turn defeats into draws and you get in the top four. And then if you want a challenge for the title, you turn draws into wins. And unfortunately, it just looks a little bit like domestically that we're reverting, those wins are turning back into draws. And look, the thing that's worth noting on this is most of those draws have come from winning positions. So we've looked, and people might go, that's a big concern, but I would still hark back to the fact that look at who we've got on the pitch. It's still Alisson, Van Dijk, Matip, Trent, Robbo, largely Fabinho in front of them, you know, Henderson. That's the back 6-7 that, you know, we've had the best defensive record in the league with those players. So if you're going to bank on a team and back a set of players to get it right, it's probably going to be the set of lads. This is not like when we had Lovren and or when we had Skrtel or
Glenn Johnson,
Sacco or Torre or all these lads, you're like, you hope they're good enough. We actually know these lads are good enough. They just need to. And I said this before, I feel like there's an attacking dial and we've just turned it a little bit too far, and I don't think we quite know how our in-game management to switch it back. We haven't quite got that right, but again, you back these lads and these coaches and all that kind of stuff to get it right. Right, we're going to talk a little bit more in a second about Steven Gerrard and what Villa could do in terms of all these things we've discussed.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Right, let's talk Steven Gerrard. 11th, he started at Villa, 11th of December, James. Villa at Anfield. How do you think you're going to feel about that?
Genuinely, I have no idea. I've never got used to the idea of Steven Gerrard coming back to Liverpool in any kind of context as a manager. Or it's he was such an integral, such a huge part of my childhood and my, you know, I struggle to think of a time before Steven Gerrard. I mean, obviously, I've been following Liverpool since 89, 90-ish. Steven Gerrard is the most important player in my life. The impact that he's had is you know, can't be underestimated. To see him managing another team, I just don't know. I genuinely don't know how I feel about it.
Yeah. We've seen plenty of, like, you know, legends return. We've seen ex-managers come back.
But I mean, it's not Stevie.
Well, we've got the Rafa thing to contend with before all that as well, course. But you're right. But that the Steven Gerrard thing, to have someone. I mean, I guess the best example of this is Kenny bringing Blackburn.
I was just going to say that, yeah.
Actually winning the title at Anfield, which is a bit of a mad thing. But generationally speaking, it's not our generation. That's the generation.
That was the first season I started going to match. And I remember, because it won't be like this, singing "Always Look on the Bright Side of Life" when Blackburn won and Man United didn't. And I didn't quite get why we were singing that. My dad was telling me, like, you know, this is a good thing. You know, Kenny's won it. It's not United. And we won the match.
Yeah.
But yeah, it'd be like, I think, you know, for me, I'm not bothered because I'm really pleased for him. I saw a really interesting comment on the Around the League. So actually, one of the lads who was on with Ross? It must have been Ross, yeah. He said that he didn't think Gerrard was as good a manager as Dean Smith. I think he's a better manager than Dean Smith, but I think he's a brilliant manager. To go up and do what he's done there, unbeaten. You forget the European campaigns he's had as well. Mm-hmm. You know, he's done really well for Rangers. I think he's a proper manager. And you can see everything about him, his aura. Them Villa players are going to know it's different the minute they have that first training session.
It's standards. It's exactly the same standards that he had as a player.
Yes.
He would demand. Yeah. And you've heard it from players that would sign for Liverpool on their first day at training. Gerrard would smash a ball at him. And go on and control that. Go on. Yeah. Let's see what you're up against. Because this is the standards that I set myself, and this is what I expect from everyone around me. I watched his interview this morning, Gerrard's first interview.
I haven't watched it. It's great.
He says everything that you'd expect, and he comes across exactly how you'd expect. The demands that he puts on himself, he's excited about the job. But ultimately, those players are auditioning now.
Yeah.
They're auditioning for Steven Gerrard.
Yeah.
You've got to impress because he's got no room for sentiment. If you don't deliver, if you don't put a shift in, you're fucking out.
Have you seen the clip going around of Jamie O'Hara when he's talking about Gerrard? like he's on TalkSport, isn't he, O'Hara, and he was saying they were talking about comparing him to, and he went, it's not even a comparison, he's like playing against them all. And he said Steven Gerrard on a football pitch is just on a different planet to anyone else. He just goes through all of his assets and facets, and he's talking about how brilliant he is, and that's it. He's going to take that in. Like, all those Villa players will know as well. Some of them who may have played against him if they're a bit older, and some of them will have heard about him to come through, they'll know that he's arguably the greatest football player this country has produced pound for pound over the last 30-40 years. Like, genuinely, they'll know what they're getting into, they'll know what he did for this football club, and they'll want it. They'll be more excited for Steven Gerrard after 2 weeks than they were for Dean Smith ever, because he's a local lad, not a great Dean Smith, but Steven Gerrard is Steven Gerrard. For me, coming back to your question, I don't know what he's going to be like. That is going to be weird.
I think
weird.
I think he'll be respectful, but I don't want him to be full Suarez, but I want him to take it seriously. He's not coming to Liverpool for the jollies. You know what I mean? No. If he wants to be Liverpool manager, I mean, I think back to, I don't want him to beat us by any stretch, but I think back to like Benitez's Valencia absolutely schooling us at Anfield, yeah, and putting in an audition. You know, it's a bit early, really. You know, it's still, he won't have had long to kind of get them up and running. He'll have had, what, 3 or 4 weeks, yeah, or whatever by that point. If that, I don't know. I want us to beat them, but I want to see a little bit of something, because he's auditioning for all of us. We all love Gerrard, but there is still that undercurrent. There's people who would be like, just give it to Pep Linders because he's there, he's into the squad, he knows the workings, and he also doesn't carry with him, and I keep using this word, but it's true, the anxiety of Steven Gerrard. I know a lot of people didn't want to take the Villa job because they're scared of, what if he's not good enough to be Villa manager and he causes them problems? Well, the honest answer is that might damage his chances of being Liverpool manager, which is probably a good thing, because he's got to go through trials, he's got to improve as a guy.
He's got to fail. Ultimately,
maybe
he's got to fail. He's got to. I'm not saying necessarily. I'm not saying get relegated with Villa. Don't get me wrong. But he's got to go through some real tough times. This is going to be. This is a different fucking beast to that Scottish Premier League. Yeah. This is a different beast.
And failing doesn't necessarily mean like an ultimate failure, getting sacked or whatever.
No.
He's got to struggle a little bit.
I mean getting knocked out of Cup, FA Cups
and beat by big teams 3-0.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Getting schooled and having to go back to basics. You know, and hopefully that'll happen at Anfield.
Do you know the type of manager he is, though? I actually thought Gerrard, before he went into management, would be a little bit like Zidane. I thought he'd come to Liverpool, he'd go through the ranks, he'd end up as number two or one of the team, and then become manager. Because I'm going to digress here, but I actually think Gerrard could do really bad at Villa and be really good at Liverpool,
yeah,
because of who he is and the command and character that he does and the standards he sets. Because you've got Linders, who's this wonder coach, because by all accounts, Michael Beale's a wonderful coach. He's the one who does all the tactical genius, and Gerrard holds the fort. He's the sort of the Jurgen Klopp, the Zinedine Zidane, the Ancelotti. Because those ones I mentioned aren't superb coaches in terms of the nitty gritty. We know Klopp does it a bit. They're not. Pep Guardiola is a top coach and elite coach, but he's not. He's on the training ground and he stop and play. Whereas you imagine Klopp's a bit more. He allows his team to do their thing. And I thought Gerrard would be a bit of a figurehead manager.
Yep.
But actually, he's actually gone and done what the managers who've never played pro football have done, and gone and managed an under-18s team and took a gamble and gone and done Rangers when no one wants it. Villa.
I think he is the figurehead management thing, but not like what Alex Ferguson was, certainly in the back end of his
Man United career. Yeah.
You're right, he's got a grounded understanding and all the things that go on around and how things work, and he does care about the coaching side of things, but you're right. Footy's changed. We all do this. It's like it works in the coaching staff as it works in the ownership structure. And we oversimplify things a little bit. So it's all Jurgen Klopp. It's Jurgen Klopp this, Jurgen Klopp that. Whereas Jurgen Klopp is surrounded by geniuses who all handle various aspects.
It's like me.
I'm not great, but I've got loads of people who are really good around. Loads of people who are very good at their jobs around it, because you can't. You reach a point where you can't do it all. Klopp did it all at Mainz, and Gerrard probably would have had a greater hand, you know, in the under-18s or whatever, because you don't have a five-man team around you at that level. But now you're right, he's got Gary McAllister and he's got Beale and he's got Tom Culshaw as well, and he's got a bunch of other fellas who's brought. So, yeah, anyway, we're getting lost in the Gerrard for Liverpool chat, but the Villa stuff's interesting because in terms of their fixture, so the next couple of games coming up, he's got Villa on Saturday as his first game at home. Crystal Palace, they then play, as mentioned before, they play Man City at home on the 1st of December, which is, there's a little chance here that Gerrard could have a real, like a real say in what happens in the title race. So obviously they played Chelsea already and got battered by them 3-0.
But they played really well,
yeah,
and had loads of chances.
Yeah, and they got knocked out by them in the EFL Cup as well. But the point of that is they've still got to play Chelsea at home, they've got to play us twice, and they've got to play City twice as well. And in a wonderful little turnabout of all these things, Man City final game of the season is Villa at the Etihad.
God, we love it. We love
running down the touchline.
We love a narrative, don't we? We fucking love a story, don't we?
Steven Gerrard doing a slip celebration.
It's when he brings himself on, isn't it?
Honestly. So there's defo wonderful sort of narrative developing around that anyway. Right, look, let's have we've got a super chat in here from It's Crossbow, which we probably should have done a little bit earlier, but said FSG must bring in one or two players in January, even if it's only on loan. FSG should have learned last season that we needed a few players for depth. I agree with everyone, by the way. I would be loads more like relaxed if it was like Virgil van Dijk, if we announced over Christmas that we've got this lad boxed off and he's coming in and he's going to come in and help us out big time. Like, I don't know who that lad is. I'm not entirely certain where I want him to play. It might be midfield. It might be an attack. I think the attack thing makes sense because we're going to lose Salah and Mane for a spell in January, certainly. The way I fall down on this, and I most people obviously watch the channel for a long time know I'm a fairly upbeat person in general. That doesn't mean I'm a fucking moron, maybe sometimes, but like, you know what I mean? I'm not a happy clappy dickhead who doesn't consider the negatives of what I'm saying. My only worry with this, two things, I think, the simplicity with which we always go, it's FSG, when it's clearly there's lots and lots of people who actually make the decisions in this. Not the owners go, here's your budget, go and do your job, and it's Michael Edwards and Klopp and Ian Graham and etc. And you know, Mike Gordon and tons of other people involved in the process. Julian Ward's probably going to have a bigger say in this because he's taken over from Michael Edwards. I agree, except that I saw what happened last January, when we went into the transfer market to try and solve a problem for 6 months and ended up with two of the worst centre-halves Liverpool have ever bought.
You
take that back.
We don't know. I've never seen them Mendes play.
We bought a fucking hologram, and we bought Ozan Kabak, who is now absolutely tanking at Norwich. And I thought Kabak was all right, by the way. I think he's okay. But to the proof, we clearly wanted Konate, and we couldn't get Konate, so we had to get something. And this is the danger of being just get a body and just get a player.
All you have to do is look down the road at Manchester United. All you have to do is look down the road at Manchester United at what happens when you buy players without a fucking plan.
He's a good example.
Without a fucking plan.
He's a good player, though. Like, you know what I mean,
it's about the plan. If you're going back to FSG and you're going back to the structure around it and who makes the decisions and who wants the players in, ultimately it stops with Klopp. If Klopp has a system and he has an idea and he has there's a list of players and it's a very, very specific list. He's not just going to get someone because A, they're available, or B, they're brilliant. Because fundamentally, if it's like a jigsaw puzzle, you can't jam players into a team that doesn't fit. Look at Manchester United. Yeah. What's
Ronaldo
there.
Scores loads of goals, but actually doesn't help the team. So it's the counter.
Exactly.
You can't win either way with him.
Exactly. And Klopp's more likely to wait until the summer, even if we do need to get a player in. He's more likely to wait until the summer when someone becomes available.
It's just, I get it. Of the idea of instant gratification, which we all want, by the way. No one doesn't want Liverpool to just be good now and be the best now. We all want that, right? You want that, right? If you don't, you're accepting mediocrity or something, like, 100%. Whatever. We all want Liverpool to be the best. And there's not a Liverpool fan in the world that doesn't want Liverpool to be the best. I'm amazed that I have to say these words out loud. But the point is, what they've always said is, when the right player is available, they'll go and move for the right player. And again, to the point, Konate comes in and solves a problem. Now, it solved it. Unfortunately, it took us a year to solve that problem, and that maybe capsized us and maybe it damaged what we were trying to do. But Liverpool are always building for beyond this one season, and I understand that that's a very hard way to live, because we sometimes read that as, well, we're giving up on this season, which is not the case. I it's who's available. and who can you get? And who
improves you?
And who's selling a player good enough to join Liverpool at that point as well?
You've got to look abroad, haven't you? We look at players like Rafinha and you go, oh, great player. Yeah, of course, he's Saint-Maximin, loads of raw talent. But those clubs need those players to be Premier League teams next year. That ain't going to happen. And then I think you got to look abroad. Like, look at when we signed Van Dijk. It should have happened in the summer. We end up getting him in January. The deal was clearly done about October. Konate, we played them in February and it was like announced.
Yeah.
Clearly that deal was done or close to in January. Right, you can't have him now, you can have him in the summer. Here's a buyout. Okay. So I wouldn't be surprised if the team looked at him and thought, we've got four very good forwards. I'm focusing on the forwards here. And loads of midfielders. None of them are really going to be missed until January unless they get injured. But in January, we've got a hell of a problem. And we could have injury. People are going to be tired by then. So we may. I will be very surprised if we don't do something in January. Neil Jones said the other day on the show, it was a really good show actually, and I agree with him. It would be catastrophic if we don't do something in January for a forward line. Midfield will solve itself, but it just doesn't make sense. Because,
mm-hmm.
like you said, who's going to play in the cup games?
Yeah, but we say this, I'm just playing devil's advocate here. I don't want to feel like I'm going to bath for like the negative side. This is the hardest part about trying to host these conversations, is somehow presents itself as my nailed on view in these things. The problem remains is that you're still got to get a player who's good enough. And so you're not buying, you're just buying another Divock Origi. Are we buying another Taki Minamino?
You're buying an 18-year-old from Salzburg called, was it Kevin Adeyemi, or his name is? Yeah, someone like that.
Exactly,
Kevin,
absolutely. Like
that.
But
that's who you go and get. You don't go and buy a 25-year-old superstar, do you? Yeah.
No.
But you can't sell that project anyway. Because what happens after the AFCON? You go, oh, by the way, these lads are coming straight
back.
And
that is exactly the point. Because you've got a Japanese international right now who can barely get a looking in the side. You've got a Belgian international. I know he's not been in the side for a while, but you know, in Divock Origi, you can't get in the side. Switzerland's best player couldn't get in the team, so we just sold him in the summer. There's a very fine margin of levels. Like, you know, everyone's going about Patson Daka in the summer, and I know he scored a couple of weeks ago, but he's not set the world alight at Leicester yet, and he might well come to do that. If we buy someone in January, it's because it's not because we've gone, oh shit. It's because it was someone we would have bought in the summer anyway, and that's what we should be aiming for. What we should be trying to do is that if there's a summer signing and we're like, and again, like Konate, you've got to go and try and bring that forward by 6 months, and that's going to cost you extra. And it's mad. I've been doing this for 11 years now, and I've been saying this for fucking years. I said this with Naby Keita, where we said, can we get Naby Keita? Can we pay more money and get Keita in early? Could we pay more money and get Origi in early? We said this back in the day. Yeah. We've had these conversations tons of times in the past. It's very rare that those things happen, but maybe there's a possibility.
You're not going to let your star player go in the middle of the season if you're Salzburg or whoever. I don't care how much money we've got a fucking league to compete for.
I mean, you might do if there's again, to the Minamino case, if there's a release clause and you're aware of it, because that's what we did. Mm. You know, we triggered Taki Minamino's release clause, and that's how we got him out of.
Well, they let Haaland go in January. They've got form for it.
Yeah,
those kind of teams have got form for it. Even Red Bull, because Red Bull and Leipzig are going to. I don't know who plays from these days. I know they've got a lad who scored a few goals, but them, for instance, they're going to go out of the Champions League. In fact, they can't qualify now. The best they can get Europa League because they're Group City in it and PSG. So those kind of teams. So if we're shopping there, we can get our man. If we're shopping in the Premier League, we've got no chance.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, I think that's right. Look, there will be an answer out there certainly to the problems, but there's no point. Again, what I'm not here for is the notion of get a loan or get a player in. It's bullshit. It's how you end up as a rubbish football team. Liverpool should only go and buy someone who improves the first 11, and if you can't, then you'd have to suck it up and get buy with what you've got, because you don't realise you're doing it at the time. But like, as an example, imagine if we'd shit the bed and signed Kabak permanently in January and then not been able to afford Konate. We'd have, without realising it, because we'll never know what we missed, but we might not have been able to afford Konate, and then without it's not tangible at the time, but you've actually weakened your squad because you've got a player for not holding on for 6 months. You've ended up with the worst player on your side. So if we bottle it and buy someone in January, who's not, you need to be at least as good as Diogo Jota.
Yeah, I agree. Or have the potential to be if they're like 18, you know what I mean?
But even then, what are you paying for them, and where does that fit in? And realistically, are you then standing in the way of one of the young lads that we've already got in terms of that, how much better are they than Kay Gordon?
Yeah.
So if you're buying an 18-year-old, is he better than what you've got already? And we'll think yes, because he's a new player, because we always do that.
We love shiny new things.
I don't know what we do. I do. We all do. The only reason I play fucking Football Manager and Chat Manager is because you do it for the signings. It's boring playing the actual games. All the fucking people with the little sliders doing playing matches. Stressful. Playing the games is stressful. Like, you know, I prefer the summer, the January and the summer windows when it's all fun and an all existing prospect. That's what they've got to balance. You've got to go and get a generational talent. But again, yeah, we're always judging it on the here and now. But the club's not run on the here and now. It's run over longer periods. We don't know that us clamouring for something to happen in January, like over-entitled little minge bags.
We want it immediately. We live in a very immediate world. Yeah. And as football fans, that's what we want. We want that now. We want that now. We want that trophy, that title. Yeah. We want this.
It's why you don't fucking judge. You can't judge on transfers. You've got to judge on the team that's been constructed and how they play the football and how the enjoyment you get out of your football team. Because if we all judged on transfers, we'd have all lost that. We never would have won the league or the Champions League because we didn't sign anyone really in those summers, and we'd have all lost our heads, and we'd all gone to the barricades and had a big war against the ownership, and we had really good seasons those seasons.
Trust the plan. Trust the process. Trust the manager.
And fear for all of your lives what happens when they all go away. Let's do that. No, let's not. It's fine. Look, there'll be more. It'll always go. Liverpool carry on. Liverpool is eternal. And they'll outlive and outlast all of us. But look, keep your thoughts coming on. I think we've discussed in the comments section. I think it's fascinating. Again, I agree. I do. I want Liverpool to go and buy someone boss. Buy a boss centre forward in January. But if you can't, then...
Don't be surprised if it's the summer.
But don't do something stupid. I just don't want you to
get Bellingham in the summer, boys.
Yeah, exactly. No, but that's to the point. But that's the, but no, but, you, but Ooh, yeah. we, no, I don't think. Well, you know, we might do, we might not do. But to the point, we'll never know.
He's desperate to come play for us.
Mate, he wants it so much.
He really wants that shirt on.
Oh, mate. Yeah. I can just see number 8 as
number
well.
Number 8.
It's coming, isn't it?
Nabby moves on.
Oh, yeah, it's going to happen.
Swap deal.
Oh, stop it, Paul. Comments will be flying now. Be on Twitter, be on Sky Sports in January now. Rumour here, Naby Keita to Dortmund in £50 million swap deal with Bellingham.
Make it happen. Make it happen, yeah, Mike. Yeah, make it Mike Edwards' parting gift to Liverpool Football Club. Anyway, right, that is the podcast for this week. It is free. We want, as mentioned, over on Redmen Plus. If you want to check out more content, we've got loads coming up this week. We've just done the Around the League show on Monday, which is fascinating, which is where we look at all the managerial merry-go-rounds and the changes and what that means to those football clubs, in particular, obviously, the likes of Villa. We've been talking Newcastle and Norwich in recent weeks as well, and plenty more of that to come. The debate show is Wednesday, which is where we take a bit of a sometimes heated, sometimes lighter look at some historical things, but also the really big topics around Liverpool football. Could we really get stuck into those as well. There's also Chris's Statue Returns. He's going to his focus this week, I believe, is only Mo Salah. The idea that only Mo Salah, you know, people go, X amount has scored the most amount of goals in this amount of period. Only Mo Salah has scored more, so he's going to be looking in depth in that and the stat show with Chris Page on Thursday. So yeah, do check out Redmen Plus and you get access to all of our documentaries, features and the Cop Canada feature this afternoon as well. So yes, plenty of time. Redmen Plus is your code to get a free month at club captain level. And yeah, that's that. Gents, thank you. That's been an absolute pleasure.
Loved it.
Hope you guys loved it too. See you all soon and the podcast will return next week. Ta-da.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both as twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.